I would like to speak today about experiments on granular gases in macrogravity. And I want also to show that accurate comparisons lead to a series of puzzling questions for theorists and for experimentalists also. But this requires to look at what is not working. So first, I recall what is a classical gas. When you have a classical gas, you have the law PV equal NRT, which is always valid, with a statistical variable like temperature, number of particles, and pressure are the good variables. And but the collision are also important, even in perfect gas, because if you have no collision, you cannot write a local pressure. So if you want to write a local pressure, you need a collision. And this means that the mean free pass is important to be able to define the continuous mechanics. And below, if the sample is smaller than this mean free pass, then you are in a Knudsen regime, and there is no more continuous mechanics description, which means that the sound doesn't propagate correctly, and you come back to the problem of the billiard, for instance. But in this case, the law PV equal NRT is still valid. And okay, so that's a general remark. Okay, so. It's okay. So what I want to look at now is with experiments on low gravity is just to look at to test some assumptions like the ergodicity, extensivity of the physics, also the possibility of extension of statistical concepts like temperature, pressure, and so on, and to look at the validity of simulations also, because most of them are not taking really care of rotation when we are looking at granular gases in low density. Of course, it is not true when we are looking at dense flow, for instance. But with granular gas in general, the assumption is to don't care of rotation. Then, and to test also the validity of the hydrodynamic approach. And to test also if it is possible to look at the dissipative granular gas at low density as a dissipative billiard. So first we'll come to a problem which is not exactly on weightlessness, but on ground. For instance, the Maxwell daemon has been found to work on ground. And of course, it has been predicted by Eggers, for instance, that the flow from one box to the other scales as n squared when n is small. And we will show that that it is not always the case, as prove our experiment. Also, I will show that probably the flow function f of n controls completely the transition and may enhance sometimes the dynamics, the fluctuation of the dynamics. Then after, I will come to a question of granular gas, really, and I will look at what occurs when the experiment is in weightlessness, and when the number of particles is relatively large, which means that the mean free pass is smaller than the length of the cell. And we will try to measure the pressure on a wall and to look at if the temperature is a good measure. And as a matter of fact, we will see that the distribution of speed will be such things like 1 over V exponential minus V over V naught. This is our measure. And we will we'll know if the temperature is a good measure. Then the third question, I will look at the limit of non-interacting particles. So I will take only one or two particles in the box, and I will look at the dynamics and show that the dynamics is mainly controlled by the rotations. Then I will try to give you, if I have time, to give you an explanation of this law and the model. And all these experiments have been performed with less than 500 volts, because otherwise you are not able to measure all the characteristics with an experiment. And this means that it is really easy to make this, in theory, to make the computation of that, the simulation. So first, you have the Maxwell-Deamon problem is the following. You are shaking two half blocks connected by the slit. And you are if the acceleration of the box is small enough, then you see that one box is half box is emptying and the other one is filling, and there is an equilibrium. So the there has been a model proposed by Eggers with temperature based on temperature and density, and they found something I will tell you later. And all the literature tells that experiments look as the prediction tell. So the prediction works correctly for the experiment. And I shall show you that is not exactly true. For instance, if you look at the theory of Eggers, you find that the flow from the slit, from one box, is given by this, F naught n squared exponential minus a n squared. And if you do, so it's really easy to measure this flow. You just take one half of the box, you put it some grains inside, you shake, and you wait here. And you look at the weight as a function, you can compute the weight in the cell as a function of time, and you get this. So by deriving that, you get the flow rules, the flow from the slit. So this is in number of beads per second. And you see that it goes from to a maximum and then a minimum. But here, it's more or less a straight line. So it means that it is not n squared, but it is n. So the question is, why is it n instead of n squared? It can be the shape of the ball, which is important, but or something else. We don't know. As a matter of fact, if the system was ergodic here, we should have a flow of balls here, which would be independent, only proportional to n. So it would be exactly n. Sorry?
These are experiments,
yeah, only experiments. And also you see that we have a maximum which is located linearly compared to the acceleration. That I don't understand. Okay. Now, if you want to understand the real way the system works, when you have two half box here, of course you have to compare what is occurring. For instance, when the two half box have the same number of particles, but if the same number of particles is here, for instance, if there is some half box which flow a little more in the other, then it becomes empty. If it becomes empty, then the flow is less, but the other is get more more filled. So its flow goes larger, and then there is a return to equilibrium. So its part is stable, but in this part it is not stable because when this one is filling up, then the flow decreases and the other increase. So it goes on like that. So you get an instability. But what is important also is that the instability occurs just at the maximum, and the shape of this curve controls really the way the system will behave. And I show you that in the next transparency. So for instance, if you have a perfect parabolic curve here, then this means that just at the threshold, all the situations are acceptable, which means that you get a supercritical case. But because all these are possible, and then they are all valid and visited after time after the other. But when the shape is the slope here is slightly steeper than the slope here, then you get the average which is doing like that, so that you can have a solution when you increase slightly the number of both. So in this case, you get a critical bifurcation because here it's you have only one situation possible, and this situation goes like that. Now, on the contrary, if this is steeper than here, then you get a bifurcation which is which with hysteresis, like that. So, okay, so in the, for instance, if you look at the experiment of Michelson, which is referred here, you see that the flow, it has been the fluctuation of the result, the result, the variation of the result has been interpreted in terms of fluctuation. But if you look at the flow, you see here that the flow shape is changing with the parameter of vibration. And this means that we change of kind of bifurcation. Here the bifurcation is here the bifurcation, the slope here is smaller than here, so you get a critical bifurcation. And here you see that the slope here is steeper than this one, so probably you get more or less an hysteresis in this case. And just in the middle, you have the case where probably you are supercritical, and this is why you have an enhancement of fluctuation in this case. So we will try to work on this with Vandenberg here. This is a result of the some discussion. So now I pass through to granular gas in zero G. In fact, I will tell a few words of we have done a lot of experiments. One, two in rockets, one in Mini Texas 5, one in Maxus 5 rocket, and few experiments in parabolic flight. And first, I shall introduce the team who is here, and with Daniel Bessin, Yves Garabos, Stéphane Fauve, and Eric Falcon. And the experiment started in 1992, and we are now in middle. And next year we will get a rocket Maxus 7, but we are still on this, working on this experiment. So it's a long time to go. So first, I look at very briefly to experiment in Mini Texas 5. We get three cells in Magnetic-Texas 5, which were vibrated vertically like that. And one cell was containing three layers of grains, the other two layers of grains, and the other one layer of grain. And what we see here is that all these ones, when here the box is moving up, and you see that there is a depletion here of grains just on the top, which means that we are in case where the speed of the balls is smaller than the speed of the box, which means that we are in supersonic condition of excitation because the walls are moving faster than the particles. So this means that if you try to look at this problem as a continuum problem, then we get a problem of with hyperbolic equation, because the propagation in this case, the continuum mechanics leads to hyperbolic equation in this case. And we see also that the cluster, or what we call the cluster, forms already when the number of particles is just equal to the number of layers just equal to one. When n is smaller than one, we still see some supersonic excitation, but the system looks more homogeneous here. So I want to tell first that these experiments are, if you don't do them on Earth, you don't get exactly the same results, because the cluster here impact always on the bottom, which means that you have not exactly the same conditions. Now I want just to recall also that we have found the fluctuation of pressure, which was like exponential V over minus A omega over to the power of 3/2. As a matter of fact, it is difficult to know if this is true, because we can have some other explanation, such that the response of the gauge which was measuring the impact was just the time response of this was just corresponding just to the transition between a kinetic regime at low velocity, where the number of particle hits less than one per unit of time, and to more than one per unit of time. So, which means that we can have change of fluctuation due to that. So this is described in powders and grains. But there is also an explanation for this power law, which means that if you use simulation with a restitution coefficient which varies like that, then you may find this law. So now I go to the Airbus experiment, and we repeated this, so the same experiment, except that in this case we have a cell with a gauge here which is fixed and a piston which is moving. And we have measured the impact on this gauge, and we have calibrated this gauge in order to get a correct result. So the size of the box is about 12.7 millimeter diameter, 10 millimeter high, and the ball is 2 millimeter. So that we have a number of balls in it, which could be 12, 24, 36, or 48. And which means that the mean free pass, which is given by that, is such that H over LC goes like 1.2, 2.4, 3.6, or 4.75. Bronze ball. We have done with bronze and steel ball. Okay. It goes like we have measured the experiment we have done was first to calibrate to measure precisely but the restitution coefficient, and we have shown that it is not at all the shape I told you previously, but that I rush on it because I can tell you a little more about after. I focus on the main problem here with 12 with the balls. So if you shake like that, here is a cell, you can get a series of impact, and from this series of impact you can measure the amplitude of this impact, which is impulse, and you can measure also the waiting time and the number of collisions per second. Here is the number of collisions during a time t for different speed of the piston, and you see that there are lines for this is for 12 balls, so the which means that the mean velocity varies as b omega. Okay. So we see also that when we are looking at the motion here, we see some chaotic motion, and the particles are randomly distributed in the cell. And if now, if I will show you, if we look at the number of collisions for time t, for the, as function of the number of balls, we get this power law t multiplied by b omega and multiplied by n to the power 0.6. This is done here. We have rescaled all the experiments. Here are the experimental points with this this factor, and we see that we are aligned like that. No, there is no big omega here. Otherwise, sorry. So now, if we are looking at the waiting time, which means the time between two collisions, we get an exponential distribution, which means that the particles arrive randomly on the gauge.
Where is your the condemned oscillators. I mean, the damped oscillators, sorry. And so they ring for a long time.
Yeah, they ring for 100 microseconds.
Okay.
And so. Oh, much less.
Where is it on that curve?
Oh, much less. In this case, we have no problem. Okay, this is it's much shorter. The time between two collisions is much longer than the time. Now, if you look at the distribution of impact, what we find is this. This is the intensity of the impact and the number of impact of size V, for instance. We see that there is an exponential decay like that. So, which means that as the impact is, of course, proportional to MV, then we get that the probability of getting an impact of size V is e to the minus V over V naught. Which means that and we find as a scaling V naught equal to NB, the number of bits, to the power 0.8 multiplied by B omega. And as a matter of fact, if we get an impact distribution like that, this means that the distribution in the cell, F of V, the number of particles having the speed V in the cell, is proportional to 1 over V exponential minus V of, multiplied by NB. So it is not a Boltzmann distribution at all.
You don't have just a flat wall and
then. Yeah, I have
enough. You have side walls as well. So the particles, particularly when there are not too many of them, will rebound against the other walls. So there will be some sort of a correlation.
It can, yeah, okay.
Back and, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, I just wonder.
No, but.
The finite size of the box doesn't have any seem to do with.
That's the test of extensivity. Yeah, that's true. But okay, if I take a too large box, you know, the problem is a problem of mean free pass compared to the size of the box. Okay, but here the mean free pass is 1/4 of the size of the box. So it means that you cannot have too many rebounds.
So it's a lower cutoff for that, right? Otherwise, it's not integrable.
Sorry?
That distribution function is not integrable. Sorry.
Yeah, that's true. That's a problem. Yeah, that's a problem. But we repeated also the experiment in the Maxis 5 rocket. And for instance, here we get an experiment with 50 balls and with a gauge, because all of these cells have not gauge. Only this one have a gauge. So, and we have get about the same distribution. So it's a stable experiment. And we have repeated it a few times in the Airbus by covering differently the gauge in order to change the condition. And in any case, it cannot be compared to the classic approach. For instance, the hydrodynamic approach of Bray et al. Predicts normal pressure, let's say, and we don't look at that at all. We don't find that at all that. And perhaps it means that there are few attractors or something like that of the dynamics, but in this case it's not so good because it means that you can have different way of, with the same excitation, perhaps you can get different regimes or something like that. So, and further also, mentioned by Maran, the attractor here is such that we have a divergence at speed V equals zero, which means that we have most of the particles which are not mobile, or slowly mobile. No, it's perpendicular to the gauge and to the piston.
The
yeah.
still beverage metals.
The like these periodic gauges, they're nice in that you can actually exploit the height of the peak, and you can calibrate it against velocities. You can actually have a good, we've done that in a chute several years ago, and it worked pretty well. So we could actually calculate the temperature, and measure temperature, granular temperature, by doing statistics of the peak heights, then convert it to velocities.
The type of what?
The signal looks like there's the first peak, and then there's a whole ringing going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Now the first peak
is directly proportional. It's not exactly proportional.
It goes, in fact, it
goes like V to the 6.
Yeah,
exactly. 6.5.
It's very well correlated. Yeah. You can measure the force. That's what the piezoelectric gauge measures. And you can actually get the. You know, calibrate one against the other in the lab.
But we have done it. Okay.
So is your velocity distribution based on the collision frequency, or is it based upon the direct measurement of velocity statistics?
Can you repeat? Is it?
You can actually, if you look at your whole
series. So here it's directly the impact intensity. Okay. And if you, in fact, it is V to the 6/5, because the intensity of the peak is V to the 6/5. Okay.
Okay. Unless it's so this is directly measured.
Yeah.
From the peak velocities.
Yeah.
Not from the collision frequencies.
No. That's directly the impact intensity.
I see. And how does it correlate with what you would predict as the collision frequency would be for the same temperature? The two measurements give you two pieces of information which may or may not be consistent.
There is different scaling between the number of the number of collision with the number of beats, for instance. So what if you look at the total number of collision per unit time, it gives like B omega and like n to the O to the 6, n to the power O to the 0.6. Okay? And here it's not exactly the same.
Maybe I could discuss it later, but if you took that velocity distribution function, you could predict the collision frequency, and that's what we...
Yeah, and that's the only problem is I cannot integrate the because it's an exponential.
So in that case, there's not increasing. So there's something wrong.
So now I turn to the one ball experiment, which has allowed us to calibrate also the system. As a matter of fact, this is also a test of the extensivity of the system. This is the limit of very dilute gas and of non-interacting particles. And it's a problem of Billiard, or if we look at a 1D problem, it's exactly the problem of Fermi. Except the problem of Fermi is without damping during the collision. In fact, this experiment has been performed to calibrate the gauge we used. And if you look at this experiment, here we have the piston, here we have the gauge, and here we have an accelerometer on the piston, and the gauge measures the peak. So here is the response of the gauge. And here is the response of the accelerometer. This allows us to measure the time of each hit. Okay, and we see also that that's visually, we see that the ball is moving vertically like that, and it doesn't jitter. It is really like that. So it's a one-dimensional path. So we know exactly the speed of the ball with this.
Are you sure the ball is always in phase with the movement of the ball?
I will come later. Okay. So we are able, knowing the time here, we are able to calculate the speed, and we know also the phase, so that we can calculate the length and so on. So we are able to measure everything and to calibrate the gauge. But the problem now is to understand why it is one-dimensional, the motion. And the reason is really simple. It is due, I will show you that it is due to the solid friction. Okay, because, and I show, And also what we see is that the motion is perfectly, more or less perfectly periodic, and we get that from the restitution coefficient, which is large enough compared to the amplitude of vibration. So I will show that both are related to that. So if you look at the collision rule, you write the equation of collisions, and you find a solution which may be periodic if the amplitude of vibration is large enough. Yeah. And if the amplitude of vibration is too small, then you get erratic motion. And you can simulate that easily. Here is the periodic motion. And here, sometimes you have some burst, but most of the time you have a random motion. And here, what is important also is that it is calibrated as function of B omega. So when you see 2, it's 2 B omega. So here it's 8 B omega. So if you have epsilon equals 0.9, for instance, you have the ball are always moving faster than the piston. So we are not in subsonic excitation in this case. And this is then the dissipation due to collision between the balls, which give you the speed which is smaller than the piston. So now if I look at collision with a wall, a tangential collision, of course, due to friction, there will be some rotation here after the contact. And this is responsible to a great dissipation when you have two walls. When you have one wall, for instance, the rotation here is still preserved as long as you go in the same direction. But with two walls here, the first impact imposes the rotation in this direction, and the second imposes in the other direction, so that gives you a large increase of dissipation. And this, for instance, you get the ball moving up and down just in one or two rebounds. So it's very efficient. And what is really interesting, of course, you can simulate that easily with one ball, and that works. And the problem of stability of this system is not completely clear. For instance, we think that for n smaller than 3%, we get this way of motion. And what is really important is that it shows how dissipation can diminish the number of degrees of freedom. For instance, if you look at this ball problem with rotation, it has 13 degrees of freedom because you have to add the time in it. And when you see that the particle is moving up and down in phase, then this means that you are one D in this case. So it's really interesting as a scholar problem for students.
Why do you say that the behavior is different than the microgravity on
Earth? Oh, because in microgravity, you get it already at very slow speed.
You get these same live modes.
Okay. No, of course you can do it, but you cannot look at the limit. You cannot look at the real limit of this.
It's small. Yeah. You cannot go to the velocities because you're constrained by the time scale.
Yeah. Okay.
But you don't need the top loop for getting a vacuum force motion.
You can get other Eigen mode. Yeah.
Yeah, if you have tension compliance, which is the most important.
So, Karen, what about the fact that your ball can also collide with the side faces and pick up spin that way, which is a degree of freedom which you can't observe? But when it collides, that degree of freedom might actually be quite at all.
Collision will upset this.
Sorry?
Any collision will upset this.
Given a degree of rotational freedom which A might impact what you actually measure with your gauge, but also of course might have some impact on this particular issue. Because now you have a spin direction.
No, but for instance we get the stability of the system even if we incline slightly the piston.
So you force it to collide with it. So mm-hmm.
Also the ball, if you get a shape of piston like that, the ball is looking at the largest distance, so it is attracted by the largest distance.
You say this, the piston and cockpit are not in parallel. You still get
mm-hmm.
the
distance. No. The two has to be parallel.
Yeah. And in fact, experimentally.
Okay, so and you do it. We do it also with two balls, and it moves merely parallel. Of course, you have some jitter like that, No, they don't collide. No, we didn't see during the 13 minutes the collision. We change the frequency and so on. They are always in phase. So even if they collide, they don't collide so much. So, but we don't know because we cannot tell if they collide because we have only a front view and not the other view. So we cannot tell if it is. In fact, they are better synchronized with two balls here in this experiment in Maxis 5. Probably it's linked to the jitter, which is. Less than in the Airbus. And here, for instance, this is the percentage of perfect bouncing with periodic bouncing. And this is the position of the piston during the impact, the mean position. And this is the length of the cell. And we see that when the frequency is small, which means that when the speed of the ball is small compared to the typical speed of the piston, then we have a reduced perfect periodicity, and this is probably linked to the problem of Fermi, because the problem of Fermi, when you have a perfect elasticity, you get completely chaotic regime. And that's probably the transition towards the Fermi problem. So that's still the same simulation. So, in fact, this means that the role of rotation cannot be neglected in any case, because in some cases you can have some transients you don't understand, and if you want to compare correctly. What we see in the experiment, we have to introduce the rotation in any case. Now we are testing the synchronization of the system of one ball. We look at the this is the dissipation reduces the efficient phase space, and the restitution coefficient depends little on the. I have the transference after the same presentation, but after. So this allows to revisit the problem of billiard, for instance. Now, the fact that the two balls when they meet doesn't meet in frontal, but collide inclined like that means that your rotation will be introduced. And dissipation will be introduced. And this is really important because in most cases, you will get, for instance, a degree of 1 or 2 degrees of freedom, which is blocked after the transition, after the collision. And this generates dissipation. So now, and this I will try to explain why we get the exponential minus v over v naught. Okay, the first the first explanation can be very simple. You take is derived from the theory of Boltzmann of temperature. Okay, you take n particle and you distribute the energy along the distribution. Okay, and you try to you have a number of completion like that, and you try to optimize the system with a given energy, a number of particles which is given, and you try to optimize the disorder, which you shall get dW equals zero. Then you apply the Stirling formula, you combine all these equations with the Lagrangian multiplier, and you get at the end that the Ne is A to the minus, A multiplied by E to the minus beta EI. And beta is the inverse of temperature. So this is because you are telling I have a thermostat. Now I just tell I have a velostat. So in this case, I have to impose V. Okay. Then I get to get this to be the preservative rule. And then what I get is Ne as A minus beta prime VI. And then I get the what I found. Sorry?
With respect to what frame of reference? You better start. With respect to what frame? But see, this is a Galilean frame of reference to which I made
one. No, I just apply. I tell what it is a velostat. I don't know what it is a velostat, but. It's the piston is a velostat in mean, let's say. You can tell the piston is a velostat, so you are in the referential of the mean position of the piston. Yeah, okay. So, but that's a way to tell it. But I have another proposition also. Let's assume that the system is really dissipative. So and let's assume that I have a ball which hits a piston. So in order, it hits a piston with a speed v. Now I can calculate what will be the probability it gets the piston with a speed, it hits a gauge with a speed v, and after round trip, it may get here with a speed v plus delta v, where delta v is the speed of the piston. Okay, but this requires that it has travel without hitting another ball. Okay, then now if I can compute that, and then this directly give you the probability of V to be exponential minus k 4 NPV over VP, where VP is the piston. Okay, this is just that. That's the probability, the distribution of heat. If I know this one, I can compute the fastest. Then now I can tell, okay, but if I want to measure to get the distribution of spin in the cell, I have to make a time averaging over that. And as the length of the ball, the length of the cell is L, the time of duration of a round trip is L over V, so that it gives you a distribution F of V like that. So also you can show that as soon as 4n is larger than 1, then you have supersonic excitation, which means that the piston is going faster than the mean typical speed. Also you can show that there is a big difference between 1g experiment and 0g experiment, because the time duration of a flight is v over g in 1g, and it is L over V in 0G. So the ceiling in 1G is V exponential minus V over V naught, and it is 1 over V exponential minus V over V naught in 0G. In fact, the reason is very simple. It's if you are on Earth, all the particles which are with low speed rebound very fast to the piston, so they get speed very fast. On microgravity, those which are very low speed stay still in the cell.
Can you still cut off your distribution, otherwise it diverges? Absolutely, it must be
a fine number. Yeah, yeah. But I see only the large particle.
Yeah,
The large speed particle. The particle with large speed. Okay.
Yeah, if you
have
an infinite system, then it's equal to V equals zero.
Sorry?
So in that case, yeah, with the infinite system, you never bounce against the third wall.
Yeah.
All the way up.
So, as a matter of fact, also you have to be very careful with the boundary condition, for instance. If you use two sawtooths like that, then the mean energy you get is zero. So the particle is moving is not moving. If they are in the opposite direction, then you get energy at each rodon. Okay. So now the problem is here. If I want to treat it, to treat this problem with a Boltzmann equation, I have to, in classic way, you tell that the Boltzmann equation is such that the variation of F due to collision is a difference between a collision with a particle which goes with the given speed P and goes out, and those which are generating speed at speed V. And after, what you do is you couple a local system like that, and you make equilibrium between these functions. And this is you get a diffusive equation of F in this case. But in my case, the particle is still moving in one direction with still the same speed because it doesn't collide. So F is not propagating. If F is propagating and is not diffusing. Even if the number of is a mean free path here is 1/4, because the mean free path in my cell is about 1/4. But what I see is just the particle which are moving back and forth without hitting the ball. So I have a special case where I see something which is different than the gas. I don't believe that these results are described in the literature already, and no more by simulations, but perhaps I'm wrong. I think that the Maxwell demon is important because we see an effect of shape, and this effect of shape, I don't believe it has been studied, the shape of the curve, G with M. And this is important because if the theory describes correctly the system, it has to describe this variation of shape. In the Brunball case, we have demonstrated that there is a strong effect of rotation and a large reduction of the number of degrees of freedom. In granular gas, we have found a very specific flow density distribution function f of v, and this means that the particle we are looking at is something which are not exactly the gas, because the gas is more or less immobile, and perhaps they might be because if we believe that the other results are true, this means that other, for instance, other theory are true. This means that other behavior can be found. It means that we have fewer factors for the same problem, and perhaps depending on the range of excitation, which means that the system may be more complex. And this, I will leave you as a conclusion, that I believe that at the beginning, when I started to work on granular physics in 1987, about, I was thinking that the statics was complicated because we are looking to a single configuration with large memory effect, and that flows, on the contrary, can be very simple because you will get a good average because the geometry changes very fast. And now, due to rotation, I believe that the statics is more simple because the rotation cannot be cannot be included in any theory of macroscopic theory, because the sliding is a dislocation, and dislocation cannot be included in the deformation, for instance, and you control the system by the deformation, not by the dislocation. You are not able to control the dislocation. And on the contrary, I believe that now the flow may be very complicated because we have uncontrolled degree of freedom which are coupled together, and we don't know exactly how. Thank you.